All right, hello and welcome to what, as far as I know, is the first ever Streaking the Lawn podcast. Can you guys confirm that for me?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, well, my name is Pierce. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
Hi, it's Caroline Darney here with you guys today, and
Paul Wiley. Together, right. Streaking the Lawn lacrosse team.
All right. Well, thanks for joining me this evening. We're here actually to do it for the first ever Streaking the Lawn podcast. We're only going to talk about lacrosse, naturally.
Of course.
Obviously. But we're excited because the lacrosse team is about to start their NCAA tourney this weekend. But I think the thing to do is really review this season. It's been a weird season, wouldn't you guys say?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely say that. It was a weird season going in because there's a lot of personnel turnover, and like naturally you expect to see some personnel turnover with graduations and all that. But we also had departure of Greg Gonsiegli on defense, who transferred to Maryland. So, I mean, go figure there. That was kind of a out of left field. And then on top of that, losing a couple players to injury, either preseason in the case of All-American Tanner Scales, or six games in the case of James Pinnell, who went down with a knee injury, was out for the season. So kind of didn't see the same team that you thought you might have been seeing coming into the season. And because of that, Coach Starja and Coach Van Arsdale and Coach Little Starja on defense were looking to fill in some holes.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the roster's been completely ravaged, especially on the attacking end, by injuries.
Yeah, guys have had to slide into roles that they weren't expected to play at the beginning of the year, whether it's, you know, a guy stepping into more of a scoring role when he was supposed to be more of perhaps an assisting role, or even, you know, a guy like Kaholin moving from midfield to attack. You've got a completely different look on the offensive side of the field than what we were sort of counting on or thinking of early in the year, and certainly going into the year too.
What's kind of cool to see is, with Owen Van Arsdale, I think might have been maybe not what people were expecting last season. A lot of people won't realize is that Owen was playing the X role or the assist role, the point man behind the cage last year for a lot. That was his primary role, but that's not his natural role. His natural role is what Mark Cochran was playing last year. You know, obviously Mark Cochran, Canadian guy, great scorer, lefty that shot from the side there. Mark Cochran graduating, Owen Van Arsdale was able to slide into his more natural position. And because of that, he's got 24 goals and 14 assists, and he's shooting close to 40%, which is significantly better than he did last year. And that allowed second year Ryan Lukovic, who's kind of Harold is like the next big assist guy, and we can kind of later get into some Steele Stamets comparisons that I like to do with Ryan. but he was able to come over 20 goals, 26 assists, 46 points. I don't think too many people would have thought that both of those guys would have been that comfortable. And as Paul had said, one of my favorite stories this season, Greg Kaholin, has just been phenomenal. And he would do anything that anyone would ask him to on the attacking end there, whether midfield or attack, you know, staying on the offensive end.
And Paul, you wrote the preview for this season, right, in February?
Yes. And as Caroline and I were talking about this earlier today, that sort of our two roles that she plays keyboard cat and I play grumpy cat, that she makes everybody smile and laugh, and then I come in and scowl at everybody and tell them why it's raining and terrible. In my season preview, I had the Hoos going 6-7 before anything played out in Philadelphia. So I am the first to admit that was not accurate, that I was perhaps too harsh on these guys. Unfortunately, my prediction of 0-4 in the ACC came to fruition. But and we'll talk a little bit more about sort of what was the reasons for that. But out of conference, UVA didn't drop a game. And when you're playing in the toughest conference in any sport potentially ever, you know, it's like the SEC West from last year for football only begins to compare to a team that a conference in which all five teams are in the top seven seed lines in the NCAA tournament.
Right. For those who are listening, who might not be the, you know, lacrosse diehards that we are, I think, you know, it's common knowledge that the ACC is the best team in lacrosse, or the best conference in lacrosse, but you might not recognize how ridiculous it actually is that UVA is essentially the fifth or sixth best team in the conference and is seventh in the country. I mean,
yeah,
which
right.
is just an absurd thing with to have Duke, Carolina, Notre Dame and Syracuse be higher, but then to have no one else be higher than you. It'd be like if the SEC West, when they were those football powerhouses, all stacked together, but there were only other 10 other teams in all of college football or D1
right.
college
football. Right. No, I mean, yeah. It's like if Auburn, Alabama, LSU, and Texas A&M played in the college football playoff. I mean, it's almost.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's absurd, and it's almost like, you know, you say the SEC West, but it almost doesn't do it justice. It's like the SEC West combined with the prowess of the top half of the ACC basketball last year. Like, it's just unbelievably strong, and you've got, you know, guys that just, you know, all Americans. The all ACC team had one UVA guy on it, and that was Matt Barrett. And I'm not saying, and you know, this is one of my beefs with about Greg Holland, but Greg Holland had better numbers than a lot of the guys in the ACC. But there's just so many guys that you're kind of like, who do you pick out of this group of people that it's just so deep. And so when they played the season, you know, Syracuse got out to a fast start on him, and that's a big face-off thing that they've struggled with. And Paul and I have talked about this repeatedly. When you struggle to face off, you can't give teams like Syracuse, Notre Dame, Carolina, Duke any more possessions than they already are going to earn on their own. And so when you get down big, I think it was 8-2 at halftime to Syracuse, that's tough. You know, and especially when they got a guy like Ben Williams, who's the face-off X, who's just been incredible. But, you know, same thing happened against Notre Dame. And in both of those games, Syracuse and Notre Dame, Virginia made a great comeback in the second half. But it was a big, you know, the typical too little, too late. But it'll be interesting to see how they deal with some of that stuff, if they're able to progress in the postseason, because they've got, if they get past, you know, Hopkins in their first draw, then they're looking at UNC and then possibly Syracuse again. So it's... Right. It, no rest for the weary when it comes to that kind of thing.
Would you say in the non-conference, Hopkins, certainly Cornell, certainly would be more the more impressive non-conference wins they had?
Yeah, I mean, certainly Cornell and Hopkins, you know, are two of the blue bloods of college lacrosse. Hopkins, you know, pretty much from the beginning of the playing of collegiate lacrosse has been the premier, or certainly among the premier programs in the country. And Cornell recently has been, you know, virtually unstoppable. That coming into the season, it looked like they were going to have three first team All-Americans, you know, one on defense, one on midfield, and one on attack. And they had a freshman goalie who last year had a 54% save percentage that was coming back. So, you know, Cornell is certainly a team that you can hang your hat on for an out of conference win. That's not to take anything away from teams like Richmond or like Loyola. You know, playing Loyola Maryland, they were the defending. They were, you know, one of the best teams in the country last year, and you know, Richmond just down the road is up and coming quickly. You know, a couple years ago,
absolutely.
You know,
they're a tough team,
last
man.
Year, right? Yeah, they're a tough out. Yeah. It's, you know, it's not like playing BMI. You know, not to name any names, but. Naming names. So yeah, it's, you know, when you're playing in the ACC, as we've just talked about, you're not going to really load up your out of conference schedule. Otherwise you're playing murderer's row all season. But you know, definitely, you know, getting a win against Cornell, getting a good solid win on the road at Rutgers, there's definitely some, you know, when you look at the teams that are generally sort of the caliber of field in the NCAA tournament, Virginia's done really, really well against them. The question marks start to be when you look at the elite teams in college lacrosse, which also happen to be the ACC teams. That's where the problem's been this year.
Absolutely.
Do you think there was a noticeable difference in how UVA performed against those better out-of-conference teams? Is there a reason we won those games and didn't win the conference games? Or is it just the fact that the ACC teams are that much better than the other teams, so it was stiffer competition?
Well, it's interesting. Like, with the Cornell game, I don't think the score correctly depicts what that game was like. Virginia dominated that game, and if not for a probably five-minute stretch in the fourth quarter late, It got a little dicey at the end, I'm not gonna lie. You know, fans on the edge of their seats, that sort of thing. But Cornell scored, I think, 5 or 6 straight to make it 15-14, and then a Michael Howard crucial ground ball on a faceoff. And so they controlled the game. I mean, dominated Cornell for the first three plus quarters.
Right.
So I mean, that's something you should kind of put the hairs up on your neck a little bit. If you're going to, you can't give up runs like that. And I think that was something that the team did last year a lot. And then with those ACC games, specifically Syracuse and Notre Dame, they gave up runs early, like just couldn't get possession. Yep. And that's something that you cannot do against that kind of team. With Carolina, that was a weird game to me. The offense just wasn't clicking. There were a lot of turnovers. Yeah. That's where the youth and inexperience kind of started to show up. And that was the biggest thing that I think this team was dealing with. We talked a little bit about the injuries, but you've got a lot of either young guys when it comes to the defense, or first-time starters. So maybe their second year, some are a third year, or in the case of Davi Sacco, guy's a fourth year walk on turn starter. You know, he hasn't, you know, he'd played, I think, 12 games combined the first 3 years and angering the defense. He's the senior guy, you know, so sometimes that stuff's going to catch up to you when you're playing teams like North Carolina and especially Duke that have that kind of more seniority, and guys like Miles Jones that are just monsters.
Right. Well, and that was kind of the weird thing, is that the team played at the end of the season sort of how you would have expected a young team to have played at the beginning of the season. The Syracuse game is the fourth game of the year. That was the first one that sort of showed the chinks in the armor. And then for the rest, you know, up until the Carolina Duke games, they only lost one out of their next 6. So, you know, and then all of a sudden it's a 6-goal performance against North Carolina that was absolutely miserable to sit through, and an 8-goal performance at Duke that was just absolutely miserable to watch on TV. That just, the ball was getting stuck in the sticks. It just wasn't popping around. Nobody was getting open. And, you know, like Caroline said, the offense didn't click and seemed like a wholly different team than the one that had played the previous month or so of lacrosse.
Yeah, that UNC game was not fun to sit through.
No.
Just so many turnovers, you know, and like you were saying, it's sloppy play, and you would expect that early on. But especially for a team with a 10-4 record, you would think, okay, well, by the end of the season, they had it together. the competition stepped up. I mean, that's really all you can say is how nasty the ACC is in lacrosse.
Yeah.
One of the things I think that's important too, and this sounds like such a cop-out moral victory thing, but with a team like this that had, you know, kind of tempered expectations, to put it in a nice way, because, you know, the players know what they've got at the beginning, and, you know, and so they never quit, like all of those games, Cornell game, Notre Dame game. Like I said, the second halves, like the Notre Dame game was 11-9, and you better believe that they were sweating at the end of that thing. That Notre Dame was kind of like, ooh, okay. If that game had been maybe 5 minutes longer, we might be talking and singing a different tune right now. You know, but it's not. It's 60 minutes, you know. But, you know, in the Hopkins game, they rattled off 2 goals in 90 seconds to tie that thing up, when body language of Hopkins at Hopkins is saying, oh, we got this in the bag, pump,
that was huge,
you know, pump in the chest. Yeah. And never quit. And that was, you know, I like to call that one Tyler German's coming out party, because that kid was drilling shots basically midfield. Like I'd never seen him shoot like that before. And that was the midfield game. The midfield said like, hey, we got this. You know, the Georgetown and Penn games, I think were crucial for this team right now, because Georgetown, I think, was a tournament team, or had a very legitimate claim to be a tournament team. You know, when it comes down to Ohio State, Brown, Princeton, and Georgetown, 2 of those 4 are going to make it. And, you know, Princeton and Georgetown didn't. That was a solid win. Like, they handled them that game. And then Penn, you hold a team that's D1 scoreless from the first goal until there's, you know, 12 minutes left in the fourth quarter. That's a pretty good day. Like, you're clicking, like you're feeling it.
Well, do you want to talk about the tournament itself, how they set that up? I know we put the bracket on the site. You can see UVA is a 7 seed. They seed the top 8 teams and then go from there.
Yeah. So it's similar. Yeah, it's kind of similar to how they do with basketball. You know, they do their bracketology and it's May Madness. And so, like you said, they seed the top eight teams, and those eight teams are going to host. The way that it's broken down, there are 10 automatic qualifiers, just the same as it is for basketball. So you win your conference tournament and you go in, you know, automatic qualify for the postseason, despite your record, no matter what it is. There's eight more at large, so up to 18 games in the tournament. Those two playing games will end up playing the number one seed, Notre Dame, or the number two seed, Syracuse, again, ACC. But you have to have, so there's a couple of weird caveats. You have to have six teams in order in your conference to qualify for a tournament automatic qualifier. So the ACC actually had one this year, despite only having five teams, because of the Maryland defection to the Big Ten. So if you get an AQ, you have it for at least 2 years. So it's kind of a weird, so Syracuse won the ACC tournament, gained the ACC automatic qualifier, which a lot of people thought would have put Syracuse in the number one spot, including myself. So some people were surprised with Notre Dame going in the one spot. The committee this season definitely did two things that they were consistent with. So that's good. You know, if you're going to do something, be consistent with it. They valued head to head, greatly. And they, didn't really care about rematches. So there's three rematches, Albany, Cornell, with Cornell hosting as the eight seed, Maryland, Yale, Maryland hosting as the six seed, and then Virginia Hopkins with Virginia hosting as the seven seed.
Right.
All rematches from the regular season.
So does that bother you?
Yeah. Mostly because as there's sort of a lacrosse purist historical perspective that you just don't want to see Virginia and Hopkins playing each other the first weekend, because that means both of them can't be playing the last weekend. But yeah, I think frankly with Hopkins' body of work this year, that's about the seed line they deserved. And as much sort of weird distance manipulation as they had to do for other parts of the tournament, you know, you've got three or four teams from upstate New York, but then you've also got Denver. And so somebody's got to do the Denver trek, and you've got to minimize travel elsewhere. You know, it makes sense, just Baltimore to Charlottesville. That's a quick, easy game. So yeah, it's always tough to play a team in a knockout situation that you've already played once in the year. That, you know, and when it's a team like Hopkins, that these are programs and teams that are going to know each other, not just because they've played once already this year, but because they've probably, these guys have been playing against each other, some of them probably since middle school. you know, I it's the kind of thing that you know, you look forward to seeing. We want to keep the Doyle Smith Cup right here in Charlottesville.
Yeah, it's a rightful place.
It should be a good game. Looking forward to seeing Virginia hopefully get the offense in order and take care of some of the team defense lapses that hurt them late in the year against Carolina and Duke, especially.
Yeah, it's I'm with Paul 100%. It's the tournament's a time to see the teams that you never, like the 2011 tournament, like Bucknell, like that was fun. It's fun looking back because Virginia won that game, but you know, it's a team that, you know, you never get to see Bucknell unless you do some like some crazy scheduling, and you get to see the Stony Brooks and the Drexels, and those are teams that honestly I don't like to see the first round of the tournament because they're tricky. They're, you know, tricky teams. But that's the nature of the tournament. It's kind of fun to see like a Yale or some of the Ivies that Virginia hasn't played in a while. Like Princeton used to be a regular, but Virginia doesn't play them every season. So a couple years ago when they played them in the tournament, that was kind of a fun game because you renew a little bit of a rivalry, but it's not someone that you see every year. So I can see, again, the distance and why. And I think the committee kind of likes to do it where you're like, oh, it'll be fun for everybody. It's not really fun for everybody, but you know, like you could kind of see they did a Hopkins watch party and you could kind of see the guys looking around like, oh, sweet revenge time. Like you can't tell me that they don't want to come down to Charlottesville and get revenge for that 16-15 overtime. You know, it was the same thing last year. Koholen hit the game winner in overtime in Charlottesville. They came back to Charlottesville first round, as Virginia being the eight seed, host did Hopkins, and Hopkins got the best of him that time. So you got to you got to think that the guys this year are have that in the back of their head, not to let that happen again.
Yeah, you never want to play a team with a chip on its shoulder in a in an elimination game. So while I'm not happy about from the big picture perspective, and I'm sure Coach Starger might say something along these lines too, that in terms of the growth of the sport, the growth of the game, the fact that there are enough other quality teams that it's not just Hopkins and Virginia and everybody else, Hopkins and Virginia and those sort of blue blood programs separating themselves out, that a team like, Denver is sneaking up into the top of the field, that Albany is there in the top of the field. So,
yeah.
It's you want to talk about expanding the sport and expanding the game into places it hasn't necessarily been strong traditionally, whether that's from individual schools or whole areas of the country in the case of Denver. That's a good thing to sort of break it out of the Long Island and Mid-Atlantic traditional foothold.
Yeah, I've got a little bit of a sports crush on Albany, and I think anyone who's followed any lacrosse in the last 2 years would feel the same way, just because of Lyle Thompson, and then with Miles there last year too, just phenomenal players that are so, and you hear this phrase all the time, good for the game. It's good for the game. But just that kid does stuff with the stick that you would never, I think the Gate brothers would sit there and look at him and be like, wow, that kid's good. He's just, the Powells and the Gates will get together and be like, man, I wish I could do some of that stuff now. And it's, exaggeration, but Lyle Thompson, and it's so chill and cool, and he's got the record, and he had the record, 3 games ago or something. So he's still got games to play and to build on that record. And that's something that, I think it was it Pinnell or Danowski that had it? Anyway, guys that had some extra time or played more games at that point to get to that record, he's already, done those things. I think it's incredible. But I was pretty glad that they didn't come down to Charlottesville, I'll tell you that much.
For sure. What are your expectations for the Hoos, first off, in the tournament?
Ooh.
Championship? Yeah, that's my expectation.
Yeah, I'll go first. You want to start? Yeah.
I'll go first. You know what? I've thoroughly enjoyed covering this team this year, and I don't say that every year, and it's not anything about the teams the past couple years, but this is really a, I don't want to say ragtag in a mean way, but this is a ragtag group of guys. Like, if you look at that starting defense,
scrappy,
yeah, all the things that, and actually Coach Sarja didn't want anyone to call them young, because he thinks it's kind of a cop out. He likes inexperienced, and and that's kind of, you've got guys, like I said, I talked about Davy Sacco, who's just been a phenomenal player on defense and just stepped up when his number was called. And the kid's got 22 caused turnovers in 14 games. To put that in, comparison, you've got guys like Scott McWilliams, who was an All-American, graduated last year, and Matt Lovejoy, who's an All-American, graduated in the, I think, 2012, or Bray Malfaris, who's now a Ranger and kicking ass. Like, they had 16, 16, and 17 caused turnovers respectively throughout the entire 2011 season.
Right.
So you've got a guy, Davy, who's got 22, and he's still hopefully got 4 games to play, If someone before the season had said, like, oh yeah, I totally saw that coming, like, big old liar, I wouldn't have seen that coming. Right. And I've watched, in and outs of this team the whole time. And Michael Howard has been one of my favorites to watch. Second year, long stick, played some close defense. And coach has said at some point, he's like, I'll put him anywhere. I just need that kid on the field. He's played wings on faceoffs. He's played, like I said, close defense. He'll do anything that you need, and he'll do it well. And it's incredible. He's got 15 caused turnovers, 48 ground balls. Like, he leads the team, including the goalie, which is rare, because usually the goalie has it, or I think we can all know where that goes, but that's incredible that a kid, can do that. 48 ground balls, 15 caused turnovers, and he only has 3.5 minutes of penalties. That's not too bad, only 4. So
Well, those are some really impressive stats you've memorized there, but stop dodging the question and tell me if they're going to win or not.
You know what? I'm going to go optimistic and think, like, if they get guys, they've got the pieces with the shooting and the scoring that actually compare or exceed past where guys like Steel Stanwyck and Chris Bocklet were at the same point in the 2011 season. And we saw how they did. So it would be definitely a coup. Like, it would be one of the big upsets, and, you know, it would throw people off. But I think they have the pieces, and I think that this team has the heart to do it. So I'll say, you know, like, let's go optimistic. Yeah, 2015 national champs. Let's bring back Charles.
They're just going to run the table again? All right.
Yeah, just but take everybody down.
At the very least, are they going to beat Hopkins Sunday?
It will hinge on the midfield shooting. The Hopkins goalie struggles. He's, I think, 58th out of 62 goalies in the country with like a mid 40% shooting or save percentage. It's not great. And you could see that with the guys in the first game when they won, you know, 16-15 overtime. Tucker had 5 goals. Zed Williams had 4. Tyler Jermin had 3. Koholen had 2. Like, you've got, that's like midfield heavy scoring. So if they can light up and stay away from stick side high on Eric Schneider, I think that they've got a pretty solid chance because they can temper down defensively on some of those Hopkins shooters. So yeah, I think they can do it.
Yeah.
So
Paul, who's stood out to you this season?
I think the two, I mean, obviously Matt Barrett, that's one that, you know, I came into lacrosse playing defense, my best friend's the goalie, and seeing, knowing something about how goalies have to have their mindset. And you can see that Barrett is just the right kind of crazy to be a lacrosse goalie, that he'll stand on his head to make saves right on his doorstep. And as soon as the ball's back of the other, you know, back into transition, back onto the other end of the field, he just sort of, you know, adjusts his chest protector, stands back in the cage, you know, says something to one or two of his defenders if he needs to make sure they're in better position the next time. But he's got a really sort of quiet, confident leadership in between the pipes. And, you know, you look at a guy taking, you know, or facing as many shots as he faced this year. He faced over 550 shots. he was basically a duck in a shooting gallery for 14 games. But we had, yeah, a scrappy defense and a defense that was learning on the fly, and he cleaned up a lot of mess behind them. So, you know, even though his goals against number isn't that flashy, you know, his save percentage is pretty strong. But he is well within shooting distance of Tillman Johnson's career save record at UVA. And when you're talking about putting a current goalie in the same breath as Tillman Johnson and saying it's a legitimate comparison, that's pretty lofty. So
he's got a legit shot at winning goalie of the year. Honestly, he's first in the ACC right now, which I think would put you first in the country.
Exactly. But, and then on, you know, for all of the offense has struggled, the one guy that I think has shown, you know, Caroline's got her axe to grind about Koholen getting jobbed by the all ACC selection team. But the guy that I have the most fun watching is Zed Williams, that he's got an incredibly easy sort of loping, you know, stride and pace to his play. And then all of a sudden he rips off a shot that looks like he's trying to hurt people. He shoots this thing from the hip that you can see the ball boys sort of scramble for coverage. I'd like to see him get more aggressive. There seem to be times that he's willing to facilitate a teammate when really what he needs to do is get his big athletic frame moving past somebody so that he's either creating a shot for himself or creating a situation where the defense has to slide and then create a really good opportunity for somebody else, as opposed to just, you know, sort of distributing from farther out. So I'd really like to see Zed get a little bit more hard-nosed. But that's part of what I'm looking for this postseason. Yeah, I would of course, I'm going to be thrilled if we're the ones holding the trophy on Memorial Day. That would be absolutely fantastic. You know, I'm not going to get on the internet and say, oh, this is bad for lacrosse, the Virginia. No, that's not what I'm going to say. But I'm not quite as confident that this team is ready to go there this year. I still have big concerns about the faceoff play, and I have some concerns about our ability to stop off-ball scoring chances for the other team. But yeah. I see this postseason, it's almost bonus lacrosse. You know, you often talk about a young football team getting the benefit of extra bowl season practices to build for the next year. And when you look at what this team has coming back next year, a guy like Tanner Scales coming back from that injury and stepping into a defensive unit that all of a sudden you've got these highly touted young recruits who've gotten a year of experience when they weren't really expected to. And you've got Matt Barrett coming back, and you've got, you know, Williams and Ed Lukovic and all those guys coming back on the offensive end. You know, this is a team that the 2016 version of Virginia is going to be, whatever happens over the next 4 weeks, the 2016 Cavaliers are going to be thought of as one of the best teams in the country, as one of the very best teams in the country to start out the year. And if they can take a big step toward understanding tournament lacrosse this year, I think that's going to put them in an even better position to get back to where we all want and expect Virginia to be year in and year out. So yeah, I think they will beat Hopkins. You know, they beat him a couple weeks ago, or you know, a month or so ago, in only the second game after losing Pinnell. So it's an offensive unit that's had more time to gel. And while I think Hopkins' desire for revenge will play a factor, I have a feeling we'll get past them. And then after that, in my mind, it's a little bit more of a crapshoot. But like I said, then I'm thinking of it as almost bonus lacrosse.
Yeah, that's it. Paul makes a really, really good point about next year, too. And, you know, oh, we'll wait till next year. But he's got an excellent, excellent point with that because of what they bring back. And it is bonus lacrosse. And I think, you know, as I said, I think they've got a good shot taking Hopkins this week. But to go further, they need somebody to do, or a couple people to do, what the Nick O'Reilly did against Cornell with the four goals, and right. what right. Colin Briggs did to Maryland with five goals in the final, and what, you know, having guys like Mark Cochran step up randomly on midfield. So you're looking in that kind of picture. I look at a kid like Joe French, I think has that kind of X factor, weird potential that could be like a Nick O'Reilly that's going to shoot this, you know, 80 mile an hour behind the back shot and surprise everybody, or run a fake ball trick, you know, hidden ball trick with his roommate, Zed Williams. But yeah, they would have to do something crazy. And I think it would be just an epic, epic postseason. But Paul's 100% correct. Like this is a great chance for Coach Sarja to kind of, this experience is something that these guys like Scott Hooper and Logan Greco and Jack Falk on the defensive end will, this is valuable experience like throughout the season that they got to start all those games and play all those games and now get a taste of postseason lacrosse that will take this team further for next year.
Good stuff. Hopefully they get past the Blue Jays at least, and as you said, go from there. Everything's bonus lacrosse. I think in order to win the improbable championship, you're looking at beating Hopkins, Syracuse, either Carolina or Maryland, and then probably Duke in the final. So that would be quite the 2015
revenge tour. Yeah.
Right. I won't put money on us beating Duke in lacrosse until I see it happen ever.
It's like Michigan State in basketball. Too soon? Too soon? Right. Too soon.
Oh, or Virginia Tech in football. Okay, great. Oh, welcome to the Bummer Podcast. Yeah. I'm going with I'm going with the Great Danes of Albany running the table. How about we lose to them in the final? That'll be my grand prediction for the NCAA tournament. Albany, Virginia final. The who's losing in a heartbreaker?
Nobody's in Philadelphia to see it.
Right. Absolutely. Well, unless you guys have any parting thoughts on the team, I mean, I think people should be excited to get out to Klockner Sunday, 1 p.m., correct?
Exactly. Yeah. Get out there, get out. If there's one way to make sure we beat Hopkins, it's make sure we've got as much of a home field advantage as we can, and Klockner gives us a great opportunity to do that.
Tune out that Hopkins pep band. I don't want to hear that song, you know.
It's also on ESPNU if you can't make it. So
yes.
Be sure to tune in. Follow the boys. Hopefully they win and continue playing. But thanks for joining me, guys. We'll see you, I assume, next week, where we'll talk about the big victory over Hopkins. And maybe some other sports as well. I don't know. It depends what we feel like. But say goodnight.
Hey, thanks, Pierce.
Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah.